Hi, I'm Chris Jackson. This is number 0372, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0372. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress Makia Cox, who is in not one but two hit television shows this season. She stars in Secrets and Lies on ABC and NBC's Chicago Med.
Secrets and Lies came first, and we actually shot that a while back. So, you know, luckily it's not like I'm shooting two things at the same time. Chicago Med really just happened 3.5-4 weeks ago. So, yeah, I came up here to do that. It was interesting because for Secrets and Lies, I believe I was cast the second or third person cast, so I was cast fairly early. So I had a lot of time to sit with Amanda and learn who she was, which is really nice. With this cast, I think I was cast on a Friday and I had to be in Chicago on a Monday.
Mike Babbins, co-owner of the Evergreen Cannabis Society in Vancouver. With the laws still in flux, it's been a difficult process to start this business.
Laws are changing every day, rules are changing every day, regulations are changing every day. It's a new industry and there's all these stigmas we're still fighting, and then there's all these issues that constantly come up. When we deal with one thing, something else happens. And just finding a place and finding a landlord who would rent to us was a big enough deal. And now we've got a great landlord. It took me 7 months to find the location we're in. And shortly after we opened up, the bank pulled his mortgage. And he went and took out a personal loan instead to pay for the place.
Jeffrey Gurry, an author of two new books, Man Robs Bank with His Chin, and also Laughing Legends.
You know, I was a writer-reporter for the legendary Weekly World News, which was the precursor to The Onion. And as a matter of fact, the guy who wrote the foreword to my book, Scott Dickers, is the guy who created The Onion. We were a big inspiration for The Onion coming into the forefront of unusual news. I was thrilled with this project because it gave me the opportunity to tell these stories that are missed by mainstream media.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0372 was musician, singer, songwriter Chris Jackson, who's also a co-host of that really great podcast, The Spoon. You got to check it out. Really great radio show, The Spoon. He's also the front man for the band Nice Guy Eddie. And it makes me wonder, how is somebody who is the front man for a band whose name is Chris fronts a band named Nice Guy Eddie? Shouldn't it be Nice Guy Chris? I mean, he is a nice guy. Just saying. Anyway, thank you very much, Chris, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, the first six words of the headline for our first story, which is reported by the BBC, are pretty frightening. But it's the seventh and final word of the headline that truly puts it over the top. Those first six words are, spider bites Australian man on penis. There you go. That last word was, again. Yeah. A 21-year-old Australian tradesman has been bitten by a venomous spider on the penis for a second time. The man was using a portable toilet at a Sydney building site when he suffered a repeat of an incident that took place 5 months ago. Jordan, who preferred not to reveal his surname, good call, said he was bitten on pretty much the same spot by the spider. "I'm the most unlucky guy in the country at the moment," he told the BBC. "I was sitting on the toilet doing my business and just felt a sting that I had felt the first time." Yeah. "I was like, I can't believe it's happening again. I looked down and I've seen a few little legs come from around the rim." He said that being bitten the first time had made him very weary of using portable toilets, and after the first time it happened, "I didn't really want to use one again," he said. But the toilets got clean that day, and I thought it was my opportunity to use one. Had a look under both seats, and then I sat down and did my business. Next thing I know, I'm bent over in pain. One of his colleagues took him from the worksite to Northwest Sydney in Blacktown Hospital, or to Blacktown Hospital, rather, although many of his workmates were quick to see the lighter side of the situation the second time around. They got worried the first time, he said. This time they were making jokes before I was getting to the car. Jordan was released from hospital and said he expected to return to work soon, but was unlikely to be using the on-site toilet again. Yes, because in the past he hasn't exactly been flushed with success, has he? And right now, right about now, just about every guy listening to this story is thinking about that classic joke where the punchline is, "You're going to die." You all know the joke, don't you? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, this next story is a cautionary tale that warns you to be careful of what kinds of women you meet on the internet. Also, make sure both of you are on the same page when it comes to foreplay. Those are the things you learn from this next story. An 18-year-old Arizona man traveled to Milwaukee, Wisconsin by bus to meet a woman he met online. Wow. From Arizona to Milwaukee. He really wanted it, didn't he? Anyway, 2 days later, a police investigation began after cops responded to a report of a possible stabbing. Officers found the Arizona man bleeding from the neck, arms, and back. He told cops that after arriving at the home of a woman he met online, he was bound and was stabbed numerous times over a time frame of what he described as 2 days. A blood trail led police to a third-floor apartment where they spotted a large amount of blood on the floor and on bedding in the bedroom. They also saw duct tape, which was fashioned in a manner that appeared to be a restraint. While at the apartment building, police were approached by 22-year-old Rebecca Chandler, who stated, "I think you're here looking for me." Chandler told cops that she had engaged in sexual relations with the Arizona man and that the cutting was consensual, but that it quickly got out of hand. Perhaps they should have only used a butter knife. Anyway, as it turned out, young Rebecca and her roommate, who she identified only as Scarlett, are Satanists. You can almost picture it in your head, can't you? The young guy shows up to find two women instead of one. Suddenly they say that they want to tie him up, and he starts thinking he has scored a very kinky jackpot. But over 300 cuts and stabs later, 300 cuts, folks, and stabs later, he was probably reconsidering that thought. In a post on his Facebook wall after he was released from the hospital, the man offered a one-word update: stitches. Yeah. First thing you should ask if you're meeting someone potentially for some kinky fun for the first time: are you a binge watcher of the television show Criminal Minds? Yeah, that's the first thing I'd ask. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, well, that's not the first thing I'd ask. There are a lot of things I'd ask before that, but that's near the top of the list. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. Finally, one last story before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. In September, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, noting a recent uptick in cases of live poultry-associated salmonella, repeated its earlier, apparently largely ignored alert that people should not be kissing chickens or ducks or turkeys. Now, the fact that the CDC has to warn people of this is also kind of frightening, just the necessity to do that and then also repeat the warning because people weren't listening the first time is kind of frightening. But anyway, CDC noted the recent popularity of urban egg farming, but reminded hipster farmers and faddish pet patrons that cuddling the animals or bringing the little darlings into the home, even though they appear clean and friendly, can spread dangerous bacteria for which humans are unprepared. You know, between this story and the current political campaign in the U.S., this could be the beginning of the end of America as we know it. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Actress Makia Cox is very busy these days. She has featured roles in not one, but two hit television series in this young TV season. She's a lead actress in the second season of Secrets and Lies on ABC, and she also has a recurring role on the NBC drama Chicago Med. As busy as she is taking a little time to talk to us right now. She joins us on the line from Chicago. Hi, Makia.
Hi, how are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. I got to tell you, one of two things, or both, either very, very talented, or you've got a great agent, or both.
Well, I'd like to say both. You know, I've been with my agent. That's the only agent I've had since I've been out in L.A., and I happen to love her, along with my manager, Charlton Blackburn. So I have been blessed to have people that have been in my corner for a long time and who worked very hard for me. So I'm thankful for that. But yeah, I mean, I hope talent is a part of it as well. I have been doing this thing since I was a little girl. So.
Well, let me say right off the bat, it definitely is the talent, because not only are you in two shows, but you're a triple threat. You're a singer, dancer, and actress. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, I started off dancing when I was like 2.5, 3 years old. And then I probably moved into singing around middle school, and that kind of took over. And then it wasn't until high school that I really sort of got into acting. And I realized with all three that I should probably go into college for musical theater. So that's what I did, and I always assumed that I would be in New York. But right out of school, I did a couple tours, Fame the Musical and Smokey Joe's Cafe, and happened to come out to L.A. And at the time, my agent was like, oh, just come out here. You know, you can just come for a week or so. And I was like, okay. And then a week turned into a month, which turned into 6 months, which turned into me living in L.A. So I never really made the jump to New York and Broadway, even though my heart still kind of lies there, and I would like to go back and do that at some point in time. But yeah, you know, you go where the career takes you, and it happened to take me out to L.A.
Now, a lot of times when you talk to performers, when you talk to actors, there's sometimes a little bit of a cautionary tale when they tell their parents at a young age, Mom, Dad, this is what I want to do for a living. Were your parents on board right away? And I asked that question for a specific reason, which I'll tell you in a moment.
Okay. I, again, was very lucky. I have been blessed with some amazingly supportive parents. You know, like I said, at the age of 2.5, they believed in me enough to, like, have me do this sort of solo song and dance, and they had a lot of their friends telling them, like, oh, she's 2 years old, she's not going to be able to do that. And they were like, no, we think she is. And so I did that, and I came off stage, and I tugged my mom's hand when I came off stage, and I said, you know, I really liked it up there. And from that moment on, her and my father knew that that was what I wanted to do. So they helped me to cultivate it, and I was in dance classes, and I was in, you know, vocal lessons all the time, and, you know, they pushed me towards this thing that I was very passionate about. And I am thankful to them every day, because they have always been supportive. And no matter what I wanted to do, if I wanted to, you know, be a soccer player or something, they would have been supportive of that. So, yeah, I'm very happy and proud to be the daughter of Judith and Ronald Cox.
That's great. I asked the question because, like I say, so many parents want their kids to be doctors or lawyers. And I bring that up because you're in two hit shows, one where you play a doctor, one where you play a lawyer.
That is very true. That is very true. Well, if they were those types of parents, at least I would have satisfied that.
which came first in the two series that you're on?
Secrets and Lies came first. And we actually shot that a while back. So, you know, luckily it's not like I'm shooting two things at the same time. But yeah, Secrets and Lies came first. And Chicago Med really just happened three and a half, four weeks ago, something like that. So, I came up here to do that. It was interesting because for Secrets and Lies, I believe I was cast. I think I was like the second or third person cast, so I was cast fairly early. So I had a lot of time to sit with Amanda and learn who she was, which was really nice. With this cast, I think I was cast on a Friday and I had to be in Chicago on a Monday. So it was a little bit different for me, but it's been exciting to be, at least seen on two shows at the same time.
Wow. Now, as far as Chicago Med is concerned, as I mentioned, you're a doctor. You're playing the adult daughter of Dr. Robin Charles, who's played by Oliver Platt. You were dropped into this show very quickly, as you mentioned. Is it just a personal relationship with your dad on the show that you have to deal with, or do you have to learn medical jargon as well, being a doctor?
Yeah, that's not easy. The whole medical jargon thing. Yeah, she's an epidemiologist, and so she's got a lot of it, especially in that first episode. And she's very smart, and she's very driven, and she's sort of an overachiever. And I think she kind of has to prove herself because she is, her father's daughter, and her father's been at this hospital and is a psychiatrist and is known by everyone. So she sort of has to prove herself, I think. But, she has a lot of that medical jargon, and I have to get my, mouth wrapped around those words. But she also has, an interesting relationship with her father. They've been estranged for a little while now, and that's put a bit of a strain on their relationship. But they're trying to work through that now, and I think it's a little harder for her than it is for him. But she's still trying.
With a show like Secrets and Lies, there's a new crime every season, so there's a turnover in cast. With a show like Chicago Med, there's an established cast. Is it different for you stepping into a role where all the players have been together for a while as opposed to one where there are a lot of new kids in the class, so to speak?
That's what it feels like a lot of the time, when you come into a new cast. And I've done that, a lot. And, when you're recurring or when you're a guest star, you're sort of stepping in and you're the new kid in class. And sometimes it can be a little awkward. But I have been lucky especially with this cast, this Chicago, when you hear the one Chicago thing, it really is kind of true because it's not just Chicago Med. They all kind of are a family, Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, Chicago PD. They all kind of hang out. And immediately they sort of welcomed me into their family, which has been really, really nice because you don't always get that. So that's been great. But it is also nice when you just come in together and everyone is new and everyone is learning each other, excuse me, which is what we got for Secrets and Lies. And you very quickly do become a nice little close-knit family, and I have gotten to work with some really great cast, and that cast was amazing, and we really all actually genuinely loved each other, which was really nice.
Two shows for the new fall season that you're on, two hit programs. Are you ready? Are you prepared for the Makia Cox explosion?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't think about that part a lot at all. I try to do my best to sort of keep a low profile. So I don't know if there'll be an explosion or not, but who knows? The question was, are you ready? And the answer is, I don't really.
As I mentioned earlier, you're a triple threat. So I'll just ask you this, you're riding the crest now with two new shows out there. But which do you prefer? Do you prefer the acting? Do you prefer the dancing? Do you prefer the singing? Do you prefer the stage?
I kind of prefer whatever I'm doing at the time.
Good answer.
I will say there is a longing for the stage because I don't get to do that as often as I would like. But honestly, I just am happy whenever I'm working. For actors, I feel like it's sort of our vacation. It's when we're not working that we feel like we're having to really put a lot of effort into going into auditions and all of that stuff. So I really am just happy whenever I'm working. But like I said, I do miss the stage. I do miss singing. I do miss dancing. I still go and I take dance classes just sort of for me, for my soul, because my soul needs it. That's what I started off doing. You know, I would like to eventually make my way back to, you know, the stage a little bit more and, you know, singing and dancing and all that good stuff.
And maybe even all the way to Broadway?
Yeah, that would be great. I would love that.
Well,
just saw Hamilton, and that was amazing. I would love to be in that show.
Well, clearly there's very little that you can't do, so I'm sure the sky's the limit. I thank you very, very much for taking the time to talk with us, and congratulations on all the things
thank
that
you
do. Thanks for being
thank
on the
program. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Actress Makia Cox. You can catch her on two TV series this season, Secrets and Lies on ABC, which airs Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Chicago Med on NBC, which airs on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. Check your local listings. And you can also go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0372, and you'll find links to Makia's site.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the owner of the Evergreen Cannabis Society shop in Vancouver. Plus, we'll touch base once again with Jeffrey Gurian, author of two books, Man Robs Bank with His Chin, yes, and Laughing Legends. That's coming up in just a bit. Plus, we have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right back to the stuff, shall we? A Colorado woman hospitalized with a cut on her arm told authorities she was accidentally stabbed by her dog. Celinda Haynes of Hudson was rushed to Platte Valley Medical Center with a 4-inch-long gash in her arm. Suspicious hospital workers contacted authorities when Haynes told them that she was stabbed by her dog, Mia. "She's lovable," Haynes said. "She'll kill you with kindness." Haynes said the incident began when Mia grabbed a freshly sharpened paring knife in her mouth with the blade pointed outward and down. Haynes said she attempted to use treats to entice Mia to drop the knife, but the canine decided to bring her new toy along for the ride. Now, when Mia went over to eat the treat, she ran the knife across my arm and cut a big old gash about 4 inches long, Haynes said. Deputy Zach Johnson of Hudson Marshal Service said he was stumped when the call came in from the dispatcher. "When dispatch said that there was a person who was stabbed by a dog, I had to make sure I heard that correctly," Johnson said. "Of course, my initial thought was, what's really going on here?" Johnson said deputies investigated the suspected domestic violence, but settled on Mia as their sole suspect in the case. "Obviously, we're not charging Mia with anything because She's a dog, Johnson said. Haynes said her arm is healing while she tries to figure out a way to deal with Mia's fascination with knives. Mia even pulls them out of the knife block, Haynes said. Really? Anything for me to chase her, she'll do it. Really? Celinda, have you read the book Cujo yet? Just asking. A recent working paper by two Louisiana State University economists revealed that the state's juvenile court judges dole out harsher sentences on weeks following a loss by the LSU football team among those judges who matriculated at LSU. The differences in sentences were particularly stark in those seasons that LSU's teams were nationally ranked. All sentences from 1996 to 2012 were examined for first-time juvenile offenders except for murder and aggravated rape cases. Well, the takeaway from this is perhaps if you're planning a juvenile crime and you're concerned you might get caught, it might be best to look up the line on upcoming games and check the spread before you act. Yeah. A man in Seattle, Washington, was arrested after attempting to claim a misplaced briefcase with cocaine. According to Seattle police, a man brought the briefcase to Officer Doug Jorgensen, saying another man left the briefcase behind after walking his dog. Jorgensen opened the briefcase in hopes of identifying the owner and found four large bags and 27 smaller ones filled with cocaine. In addition, the briefcase contained a scale, 50 diazepam pills, and a small amount of marijuana, as well as a 19-year-old man's ID and cell phone. The 19-year-old later approached officers outside of a Seattle Seahawks game, inquiring about the missing briefcase. According to officers, the man said it contained some important work papers that he really needed to get back. Now, police said the man was later arrested for possession of narcotics with intent to distribute. Word of advice, pal. When you lose something like that in a very public place, don't ask the cops about it. Just walk away and cut your losses. Yeah. I'm guessing he was probably selling drugs outside of a Seahawks game. Just going out on a limb here. Allegedly. Got to put that word in there. Allegedly. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 36-year-old Bruce Dewey evidently did not like being followed, so he called 999, the British equivalent of 911, and asked the police in Worthing, West Sussex, England, to stop chasing him. No luck. The chase went on for almost 50 minutes. Police said it wasn't at high speed, but three police vehicles were damaged anyway. Chichester Crown Court sent Dewey to jail for 15 months on a guilty plea to driving dangerously without insurance and without a sufficient license. The chase began when an officer, who knew his license was provisional, recognized him behind the wheel. You know, I wonder if he's still making phone calls. Hello? 999? Could you please stop these people from keeping me in this cage? Yeah, it didn't work before. It wouldn't work now. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? Last week on the program, we had a guest later who was someone from out of my past. Mike Babbins was a former producer at the old radio show I did back in the day. These days, he and his wife live out west in British Columbia, where they run a nonprofit compassion club called Evergreen Cannabis Society. I thought we'd find out more about it, so joining us on the line right now from Kitsilano is Mike Babbins. Hi, Mike.
I feel like I should be sending you a cue.
Those were the days. Those were the days.
Yeah.
How are you doing, sir?
Very, very good. Happy to hear a good old voice that I haven't heard in a while.
So,
how you been?
I'm doing okay. So this is quite a departure from what you were doing in the radio days?
Well, it was kind of there during the radio days. I just had to keep it quiet.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So how did you even get into this this idea of a compassion club?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I'm sure, you know from the news that Vancouver is the place, the first place where they're being licensed, and, you know, the famous BC Buds. And about 2 years ago, my wife was diagnosed with precancerous cells in her uterus. And we, they told us they wanted to do a hysterectomy right away, and we said it's not even cancer yet. why don't you give us some time to look into alternatives? And we spoke with some naturopaths, and we spoke with a doctor who was focused on this very rare cell, and we even spoke with Tommy Chong's naturopath. And we were able to get rid of the cells using all natural methods. And one of those was a cannabis concentrate called Phoenix Tears, which is known to kill tumors and fight these cells. So while we were doing all that, we went into a lot of dispensaries in the city, and we were really disappointed in most of the places we went into. And we were like, you know, this is a whole new industry. We're trying to get rid of the old stigmas. And you walk into one of these shops, and it feels like you're in a 1970s head shop with, like, lava lamps and Hendrix playing and really stone guys behind the counter. So once we cured her and found out she was totally fine, and then I left the previous job I was doing in Vancouver, we just decided to take a chance and open our own.
That must have been quite a leap of faith to do that. Were there any stumbling blocks in your way to opening up your shop and doing it the way you wanted to do it and the way you felt it was right?
Well, we're still in the middle of that. It hasn't ended yet. Laws are changing every day. Rules are changing every day. Regulations are changing every day. So it's a new industry, and you know, there's all these stigmas we're still fighting, and then there's all these issues that constantly come up. When we deal with one thing, something else happens. And just finding a place and finding a landlord who would rent to us, I mean, was a big enough deal. And now we've got a great landlord. It took me 7 months to find the location we're in. And shortly after we opened up, the bank pulled his mortgage, and he went and took out a personal loan instead to pay for the place.
Wow. Okay, so what exactly are the rules and regulations that you have to follow that people might not be aware of?
There's a lot. Well, we have to have a lot of warning signs. We have to be very well-trained and well-informed. Anyone who joins has to join our society before we could help them in any way. We have to be 300 meters from any other store and any other cannabis store. We also have to be 300 meters from any what they call dangerous areas, such as schools or places where playgrounds or daycares or things like that. We're actually a little too close to a French immersion school, but we went before the city with a note from the principal saying they had no problems with us, and that was another hurdle we had to jump over.
Okay, so as it stands right now, as I'm sure you're fully aware, the use of marijuana is still not completely legal in this country. So we're talking not for recreational use here, but we're talking medicinal, correct?
Exactly. And it still isn't fully legal. It's a very gray area business that we're in, and it's a very gray area city, because even though it's still illegal, the city of Vancouver and the police department of Vancouver, because we're like Montreal where we have our own police department, it's not provincial or federal, we have the VPD, and they endorse the system because basically they have other things to worry about than people smoking pot. So when you join our society and you purchase from us, you're agreeing to the terms and conditions that you're not going to walk around on the street smoking a big joint, you know, that you'll consume it in your own home, you'll consume it responsibly, and you're not going to consume it while driving or anything like that. And if someone from the Vancouver Police Department catches you and finds it on you, but also sees that you have our card, they will let you go. Just ask you to be more reasonable. But if an RCMP officer finds you and you're outside of the city, that's another situation.
So do people who are members of your society, do they have to give a medical reason as to why they want the pot, or can they buy it recreationally?
They have to show us any confirmation of their diagnosis. So they don't need a letter from the doctor saying, you know, I just recommend marijuana. We just need proof that you have something. And we're very liberal as to what that is. Because basically the way our society is worded, and each shop is different, so I'm not speaking for the other stores. But for us, if you have something that you as an adult are choosing to treat with cannabis, we as a society will provide the highest quality organic cannabis possible and help guide you into what strain would help you the most.
How much of a growing business is this? You're in Kitsilano, as I mentioned earlier. Are there a lot of stores like yours, or are there just a few?
There were, but the city recently invoked its licensing, and the ones who didn't get their license or didn't prove that they were doing things right got shut down. So last summer there were 200, and now there's just under 100.
You also mentioned earlier that your landlord had to get his own money for the mortgage of the building that you're in. That's one of the problems that I know Compassion clubs have, is that banks don't want anything to do with the business you're in. Do you have to deal in cash?
No, there's some banks that are still willing to do it or look the other way, or if we've got a holding company and everything's going through that, so the bank is aware, but they're saying, okay, it's a holding company. And pretty much, we do know that according to our Liberal government, it will be legalized within the next year. And don't forget that this industry will remember which banks turned their backs on us.
Mm. Now, as you say, you first got into this because you were looking for shops for your wife initially, and you didn't like what you were finding. Now that you're doing this, what's the biggest part of the learning curve for you in the process that you've gone through?
You know me. It's kind of hard for me to not always be drawing attention to myself. I like people looking at me, and I've kind of got to learn when to keep my mouth shut or when to take a step back. And same time, we have other issues that we aren't allowed to advertise where children can see it. So I've had to come up with interesting ways using social media or sponsoring events but not actually advertising our store, just to get our logo out there and finding ways to get attention without getting the wrong attention.
We should mention you are members of the Cannabis Growers of Canada and also the Canadian Association of Medical Cannabis Dispensaries. How strong are the organizations to help you deal with some of the pitfalls you might come across or the daily problems you might have in running a business like this, which, as you say, is still quite a gray area?
The Cannabis Growers of Canada is probably been our biggest lifesavers. The CAMCD, we kind of had to join to get approval by the city, and we pay our fees to them, and they're just kind of there. They've put out the rules. We follow them. We actually go above their rules. The CGC, the Cannabis Growers of Canada, they've helped. They really care about this industry, and they're really working to make sure working to represent us in the federal level. They're also there when we have any legal issues. They're able to help us, so we don't always have to go right to the lawyers. They've got more experience dealing with the city, so they can make those calls for us. As well, by joining the CGC, we've aligned ourselves with a group of cannabis growers who go above and beyond what the federal government has made as the rules for the licensed producers. So everything we get is fully lab tested. It's fully organic. It's grown in small batches. It's higher quality. It's nicer quality product.
As the Prime Minister has promised, there will be a situation or a time when pot is legal. When that happens, will that feel like a giant weight lifted off of you? Or conversely, do you find that it's going to be a problem where suddenly you'll have a lot more competition as other people, Johnny-come-latelys, are jumping into the game?
Well, I kind of really have no clue, and my opinion of that changes every day. Of course, I can't wait for it to be legal, because it's kind of ridiculous that it's been illegal this whole time. I don't know what the future will hold. I've spoken to a lot of people who are involved in the discussion groups, and I think it will work out well for dispensaries in Vancouver anyways, because we'll kind of be grandfathered in and we'll have the reputation already. I mean, when you talk of, the pharmacies or the liquor stores wanting to get involved, it's kind of like, there's always people who are going to want to go do their shopping at Provigo, but then there's also the people who are going to want to go to the small grocery store and get higher quality from a mom-and-pop shop. So that's where we'll be.
Mm. People can find out more information about your organization, your establishment, which is Evergreen Cannabis Society. The website is evergreencannabissociety.com. Mike, nice to talk to you, and glad everything worked out with you and your wife, and thanks for being on the program.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Mike Babbins, co-owner of the Evergreen Cannabis Society. Again, you can find out more information by going to their website at evergreencannabissociety.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0372, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Frank Kelly served as a state attorney general longer than anyone in the history of the United States. During a 37-year career in Michigan, the lifelong Democrat created the country's first consumer protection division. Frank Kelly's reputation as a consumer advocate helped him win 10 elections, as well as the support of many trial lawyers. So, when Kelly retired and he was asked to speak to a large group of lawyers, he surprised many when he told them that there's too much litigation today. He said, "Too many lawyers think that lawsuits are the first resort, when they should be the last resort." His comments were reported in the newspaper the next day, and I've kept that article ever since. Let's be fair. Last week we heard that the former liberal icon George McGovern believed there are too many lawsuits in America, and this week we hear the same thing from the Attorney General who created the very first government agency to protect consumers. It reveals that support for ending the problem of excessive litigation is much more widespread than many may think. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to an old friend of the show, Jeffrey Gurian, who has 2 new books out, Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Laughing Legends. Plus, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you before we get to all that on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Okay, please follow along very closely on this story, because to me the real issue here is ethics. Let me explain. Robert Hannon was placed on unpaid leave from his job as CEO of the Anne Arundel County, Maryland Economic Development Corporation. Now, these serious charges against Mr. Hannon are surprising and constitute a need for responsible leadership pending the resolution of this case, said County Executive Stephen Hsu. The charges came after security footage caught Hannon entering a neighbor's home, touching an item of clothing draped over the footboard of the bed, and then going through lingerie in her dresser drawer, according to the police report. Now, Hannon was charged with first and fourth degree burglary and theft. Okay, here's where the ethics come in. The footage was captured on another neighbor's security camera, apparently pointed at the victim's bedroom. Yikes. This woman has some really class neighbors, huh? On all sides, apparently. So, having learned all that, I guess it's a crime to touch, but not to look. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Jeffrey Gurian is a very funny man. I've gotten to know him over the years because the New York City-based chronicler of comedy has been coming to Montreal each year for over 20 years for the Jets for Laughs Festival. Jeff has not one, but 2 new books out. One is Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Other Stories Missed by the Mainstream Media. And the other is Laughing Legends, How the Comic Strip Club Changed the Face of Comedy. Jeffrey joins us on the line right now from New York City. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hey, Peter. How are you, man?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for doing this. Always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Always fun. Always fun. Well, we go back more than 20 years. It's amazing how long we know each other, and it's great. Always good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Now, I know you got the 2 books out, but I want to primarily talk about one of them, because the first one I mentioned is really kind of close to what this show is all about, which is sharing some of the odd news stories that are out there in the world. And you've been collecting this, and you've put it into a book, which means you beat me to it, is what you've done.
Ha-ha. Well, don't be jealous. There's plenty of unusual stories to go around, you know, but that's my reputation. You know, I was a writer-reporter for the legendary Weekly World News, which was the precursor to The Onion. And as a matter of fact, the guy who wrote the foreword to my book, Scott Dickers, is the guy who created The Onion. We were a big inspiration for The Onion coming into, you know, to the forefront of unusual news. And so I was thrilled with this project because it gave me the opportunity to tell these stories that are missed by mainstream media. Not only Man Robs Bank with His Chin, but stories like Man with Infant's Head Sues for Discrimination, And you know, a lot of these stories are in the courts. He claims he can't get a job on Wall Street because he has the head of a six-month-old infant, right? He suffers from infantilism. He's 6'1", but has the head of a baby with wispy hair and baby teeth. And they claim that it has nothing to do with that at all. They say that it's because he misrepresented his financial experience. They needed someone to run a multi-billion-dollar hedge fund, and his experience was running the cash register in a bakery. So they didn't feel that he was qualified to run this hedge fund. Not only that, the man's name, wait till you hear this, his name is Luigi Capodanfante. Capodanfante. He claims it's merely a coincidence that his last name translates in Italian to mean head of an infant. Can you believe that? He had no idea. He said someone recently told him that his name means head of an infant. Now, he claims that they laughed at him and took pictures of his head during the interview. But the company says that they take pictures of all of their prospective employees for security reasons. And he says that they were rude to him. And they say they were so nice to him, they even helped him untie his hat. Because he wears an infant's bonnet that's tied under his chin. And they don't feel that that's a good look for their firm. So now it's in the courts. You know? Now it's in the courts. And there are many stories like that. Like man killed for giving girlfriend a snail instead of an engagement ring.
I guess she wasn't into
escargot.
I guess she wasn't into escargot.
Well, she waited for 20 years for him to pop the question. And one night, you know, he invited her to a very fancy restaurant in their town, a very small town. I think it was in Colorado, if I remember correctly. And he ordered their fanciest wine, which is about $47 a bottle. And she thought that he was going to give her a ring when he pulled out this tiny snail. Now, he had read somewhere that in the Fiji Islands, when a man cares about a woman, he presents her with a tiny snail. Well, she thought it was a joke at first, but when she found out he was serious, she killed the snail and then killed him. And when the police came, she said, "I would have been happy with just a plain ring. Why did he have to give me that snail?" Isn't that something?
Wow. Wow.
Isn't that amazing? And you know, the stories go on and on. Man slips on pat of butter, winds up in the next town. It was the longest slip on record, really. The only slip further was that it almost came close to that was during World War I. A soldier slipped and wound up, he flew behind enemy lines. But that was the closest that anyone came. This guy, he was so thin that a strong wind picked him up. He flew right out the window and wound up in the next town. You know, unbelievable, right?
You know, I don't know why Donald Trump isn't tweeting about you.
I have no idea. I should look into that when we get off the phone. Because there is some, you know what he would like? He would like the story, High Roller Wears Mustache Made Out of Gold. Now, that's another story that wound up in the courts because his mustache was so highly polished. His name is Laszlo Matusch, and he was a very he gambles like $200,000 a hand, and he strolled into this casino wearing a solid gold mustache that was so highly polished that it hurt the eyes of the dealer, and people sitting next to him at the table were actually suing him for eye damage. I don't mean to laugh at such a serious story, but they said that it's not the first time that he's come in with such fancy facial hair, that to the Cannes Film Festival, he showed up with a diamond-encrusted beard.
Jeffrey, how many books now have you written?
This is my third and fourth book. The first book was based on my writing for the Friars Club. For many years, I was the head writer for the Friars Roasts, And they came to me and they wanted a book of celebrities' favorite dirty jokes. And I got 250 celebrities to tell me the nastiest jokes that they could think of. And that book was called Filthy, Funny, and Totally Offensive. And then I wrote a book called Make 'em Laugh. And now I have these two books, Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Laughing Legends, which has an introduction by Chris Rock.
Well, let
and
me
it's
ask
the
you this.
Story of
Let me ask you this, since especially considering the title of your first book, do you find that, and I've had a discussion just recently with David Feldman, and I'm wondering, do you feel that comedy today, or that the politically correct world that we live in is hurting comedy today?
There's no question about it, and it's really a terrible thing, because there's a whole segment of our population, and I'm sure it's the same in Canada, who cannot wait to be offended by something. And one of the beautiful things about comedy is that it's supposed to be a healing force. It's supposed to bring everybody together to laugh at themselves and then at each other. And Lisa Lampanelli is a great example of that. Russell Peters is a great example of that. Because and people are not offended by them, because they know that they're coming from a good place. They come from a place of love, a place of inclusion. Everybody has something that can be laughed at, and you have to have a sense of humor. And these days, these radical people on the left, it seems, are so offended by no matter what you say that comedians are having a hard time. Everybody is one tweet away from losing their job. Now, I personally stay away from anything political or religious. I've been performing for a while. I don't even know if you know that. I've been doing stand-up. I made my debut recently on Access TV on Gotham Comedy Live with John Lovitz. But I've been performing for a while. And even though my stuff is very mild, there are people once in a while who are like, ooh, ah, you know, stuff like that. And a lot of comics have to remind them, look at the sign. This is a comedy club, you know. I did a show last week, and it was a predominantly black audience, and I did some racial humor, and they loved it. And I thanked them afterwards. I stopped afterwards, and I said thank you for allowing comedy to work as a healing force, because if we can't laugh at each other, then what do we have? And people can tell. Our intuition is very strong. You know when someone is a hater and someone is just making a joke. And that is being lost today.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's how I feel about it. But that being said, too many young comics think that they have to go up and talk about going to the bathroom. And I don't know what that's about. I'm a judge at a lot of comedy competitions. And, you know, I'm not offended by, I'm not a prude. I mean, I wrote for the Friars Roast for many years. They were filthy and raunchy. But I always asked, before I wrote jokes, I always asked the person being roasted if there was anything that was off base to them, if there was anything personally that would offend them, and I wouldn't write jokes about that. These days, roasts have become very mean-spirited. I think it started with the Chevy Chase roast some years ago, when he was actually really hurt by the things that people said. These days, there are no holds barred, because there's almost nothing left to say. And people say, they talk about people's dead parents, things that you wouldn't say years ago. And again, a lot of comics think that they must talk about going to the bathroom, which you're supposed to get over that by the time you're like 11 years old.
Well, by the time
it's
you're
not funny anymore.
By the time you're potty trained, you should be over that. But anyway, Jeffrey.
Exactly, yeah. And so that's a big thing for me, that a lot of young comics, you know, if you're creative enough to go on stage, then think of something nice to talk about, so that if you're there with a date, that you don't have to laugh out of embarrassment, that you laugh because it's funny.
On that note, Jeffrey, you know? Jeffrey, I gotta cut it short here because we were just about out of time. I want to mention the name of your books again: Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Other Stories Missed by the Mainstream Media.
And it's available on Amazon.
Yeah, and Laughing Legends: How the Comic Strip Club Changed the Face of Comedy. People can always go to your website. You've got several of them. You also have a YouTube page. Jeffrey, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you once again for being here.
You're very welcome. And it's ComedyMattersTV.com is my site, and people can go there and they'll see all those videos and lots of fun stuff. Thank you for having me.
Jeffrey Gurian, author of Man Robs Bank with His Chin and Other Stories Missed by the Mainstream Media, and also Laughing Legends, How the Comic Strip Club Changed the Face of Comedy. You can check out his website at jeffreygurian.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0372, and you'll find links to Jeffrey's various sites, including his YouTube page. You'll also find links to amazon.com and amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A burglar broke in through the ceiling at the YMCA in Indio, California. He apparently didn't bring a flashlight and couldn't see much, though an infrared-equipped security camera captured the whole thing. Police Sergeant Dan Marshall says it's likely the burglar had experience with breaking into places through the ceiling, and sure enough, he hit pay dirt. The burglar found a cash register and was able to open it and scoop up plenty of money. What the thief didn't know, he dropped into the children's center. The cash register was a toy, and the cash was play money. I'm guessing in the dark describes more than his criminal M.O., because why, oh why, would someone who is planning such a robbery not know in advance that the place he was planning to hit featured children's toys and fake cash? One reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0372. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0372. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.